And with our special guest this hour, John Hogue, as we talk about prophecy and the solar eclipse, and we will take your calls as we continue chatting with him when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Hogue with us. John, let's finish up about North Korea and get your thoughts on that as we move on to another topic and some calls here.
Well, basically, I think there's a whole lot of hype about war, a whole lot of hype about Kim Jong-un being completely crazy and unstable. I don't like his politics or his worldview, but I'll just say for the record that this is the first time that the Kim dynasty has faced an American president who absolutely gets their game. And he's playing it to the hilt. And it could lead to a war, especially around October. But it also, as close as it is to war, it could lead to a breakthrough, a peace initiative.
Now, we had a story earlier today, John, when you were on hold, about the fact that he has probably killed off so many people who don't treat him as a god. We know he killed his uncle. We know he's killed his uncle's family because he didn't want anything to do with their existence or their name. He probably killed his half-brother in that assassination attempt at the Malaysian airport. There's something wrong with this guy.
Well, we have to define what wrong is. There was something wrong with Joseph Stalin, but we couldn't have won World War II without him. So there is the problem with a lot of this is that there's a lot of emotional impact that the news uses to gain ratings by frightening people. Yeah, he's a terrible guy, Kim Jong-un. I am not a fan of Kim Jong-un, but I am an observer of realpolitik, of what is possible in politics. You deal with all kinds of characters. I could also turn around and say, if you ask the people of Nicaragua what they think of our presidents who murdered 40,000 of their people with the Contras that they armed and financed, and I could list for an hour the abuses and the outrages that America has done, the 89 elections that we directly influenced, put Russian hacks to a side over the last 50 years that changed the course of other countries' futures. One could point the finger at us and say that we've murdered a heck of a lot more people than Kim Jong-un in the name of democracy over the last 50 years. So the point, though, is, yes, bad man. But, of course, we've had our own bad leaders, too. The question is he unstable? Is he irrational? Is he about ready to blow everything up? I've been saying for years that when you deal with Stalinist leaders, leaders who believe in a form of atheism, the atheist is not the first person to throw his life away. If you want to see people that are ready to throw their life away for paradise, go to the religious extremists, the theists. Go to Al-Qaeda. Go to ISIS. You won't see communists doing that. So there's some just basic fundamental understandings that this is a man who's playing bluff. You know, if it goes to war, he's over. The game's over.
It is over. That's right. And if he does one stupid thing, it's over, I think.
So he's not going to do that unless with our hysteria and our push and the neoconservatives that are pushing this, we overstep our bounds. I have great hope, though, in the South Korean president, the new president. I think he's going to end up being their John F. Kennedy.
He seems like he's got his act together if they let him do what he's supposed to do.
And he's been compromised in that regard, but he stepped forward just now and made the point that there's just not going to be a war. And he also stepped forward and said something which most Americans don't understand, is this, that South Korea, the generals don't have the power to go to war or not. That is ordered by the U.S. generals that are there.
That's right.
He just stepped up and said, no, basically, we're not going to let this war happen, which was a big step.
Why didn't they ever sign a peace agreement?
Well,
a treaty? I mean, they're still technically at war.
We're technically still at war with North Korea since 1953, as the war started in 1950. And the armistice was signed with the hope that within a few months, there would be a peace agreement that would demilitarize the Korean Peninsula, that would see Chinese and American forces leave the Korean Peninsula. The Chinese left. The Americans not only stayed, they increased their forces, and up till 1989, planted 500 atomic weapons stockpiled in North Korea, in South Korea. I'm just looking at the facts. And in my book, Trump Strikes Syria and North Korea, which was released back in April, I looked at all of this I tried in my writings to give the people the other side of the news from beyond the veil that's cast over by the mainstream news now, where you might find out why the North Koreans are doing what they're doing, why they support this madman. They're kind of forced in the corner by us. We have technically, since 1950, from MacArthur to Truman to Eisenhower and beyond, have openly said to the North Koreans, we reserve the right to use atomic weapons on you whenever we want. And that's like 40 years before they were trying to build any bombs. The only reason why they didn't do it earlier is because the Soviet Union still existed as a umbrella of protection. But when the Union collapsed in the early 90s, at the end of the Cold War, the North Koreans had to look at protecting themselves with a deterrent. So long story short, they have this deterrent, which actually they froze work on it during the Clinton years. But when the Bush administration came in with their axis of evil and their neocons, they basically sabotaged all the forward progress that happened in the 90s to curtail the North Korean nuclear program. And when they started declaring that North Korea was on a hit list with Iran and Iraq as the axis of evil, they resumed their nuclear weapons program. Any country in the same position, whether their views are right or wrong, would do the same. We are not told that. And the American people are gravely misinformed and marching off with, I would say, an illusory idea of what's going on in the world. And, you know, I've been on the show since April 2014, warning that we're now in this period of the short countdown, long countdown of Nostradamus for a new Cold War that rapidly, within 3 years and 7 months to 10 years, 13 years, suddenly goes hot. And the West is the main proponent of it against the East. They're planning it. And in short, we are kind of working ourselves up to fight a war that need not happen. And the people that we're turning into boogeymen are not actually as scary as ourselves.
Well, that's true. That's true. Let's go to the calls. First-time caller Doug in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, George. Hey, man. I'd like to ask John a quick question.
Sure.
And also met you at the Asheville show a year ago.
Oh, great.
Tommy, we had a great time, man.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out there.
Hey, John. We live in the Appalachian Mountains. I've got a cabin that's way up in Blowing Rock, which is about 40 minutes from the Virginia line. And there is a major fault line that runs through there and down the Appalachian Mountains and into Tennessee. What do you think about that with this up-and-coming eclipse? Do we need to be scared?
Well, I think you're not so much in the direct totality than if you were in South Carolina, if you were in the hills around South Carolina to the east, a part of that line, of course, is lower. I'm more concerned about Charleston.
And when you say concerned, are you talking about something big, John?
Well, I look at the evidence of what happened there in 1886. When there was a major quake of 7.5 or above estimated in that region, which devastated Charleston. And like I was saying, the devastation spread 60-mile radius inland. So, I mean, I hope none of this happens. I'm actually happy to see that when the eclipse came over in 1918, even though it only touched one of the major seismic zones, nothing happened in the Pacific Northwest. I would love to be completely wrong about this stuff, but there's enough indication that these areas could be under danger that I thought it was important and compassionate to kind of warn people to kind of prepare for it and in the long term think in those seismic zones about improving their earthquake preparedness. I mean, here in the Pacific Northwest, we are so unprepared for, even on the coast here, for what might happen. People don't even know where to escape to higher ground. Some areas no higher ground and need to build what the Japanese did, these fortified towers. There's only one, I think, in Long Beach, Washington, that's been built. It wouldn't cover or protect everybody to get into that higher fortified building. And, you know, the estimates are that if we have an 8.5 or magnitude 9, like the 1700 quake, they're saying between 10 and 14,000 people on the Oregon and Washington coast, not as densely populated as Japan, but 10 to 14,000 people could be drowned by this.
In harm's way. God, that's horrible. I'm in St. Louis now, John. I'm going to be here for the eclipse.
That's interesting because you're right on the edge there.
Yeah.
And St. Louis, back in 1812.
Oh, yeah. It got hit.
Was devastated. So it was a small town, but now there's, 2-3 million people in the metropolitan area. And, if there was a quake like the 1812 quakes, it would be devastating to St. Louis, Missouri. So it's time for the people of St. Louis to think in long-term planning with the plans that are in the air about great American infrastructure repair. One of the big programs should be to reinforce all the brick and mortar buildings like we're trying to do in Seattle, because we have a lot of brick and mortar also.
What is it about the path of the shadow of the eclipse that has an effect on some of these areas?
I mean, that's the big $64,000
question. Sure is.
And just like science knows that gravity exists, they can't actually say what it is. They just see its effect. And there could be
electromagnetic
or other things that influence the cosmos. I mean, one great example is a little ice ball comet that came in back in 2013, Comet Ilanen, that came in, and when it lined up three times with the Earth and the Sun, you had, just like you will often have around major quakes during a full moon, a few days before on or a few days after the full moon, what we call in astrology the waxing and the waning of degree, they had major quakes. There was the February 2013 tsunami off of Chile. There was the Christchurch quake in New Zealand. And there was the Tohoku quake, the March 11, 2011 quake, when Lenin was coming in, and they lined up within exact or a day in or out of that lineup happened with those big quakes. So when it was coming around the sun, a lot of us were waiting to see a lot of us who watch this kind of stuff astrologically were waiting to see the next two lineups, which would happen when Ilanen was passing out of the solar system. Ilanen broke up from the stresses of the sun's gravity. So an interesting test was then there for all of us. Now that it wasn't there, would there be no lineup quakes? And there wasn't. So I don't know why that happens. I'm sure if we were having this talk in the 1870s, we might be debating whether one can actually send signals in the air that can be received by some receiver, and we could actually hear people talking out of the air. It wasn't until Tesla and Marconi actually created this kind of devices that we now know that there is such a thing as radio waves.
That's right.
And I mean, I will take it even further. I've said this on your show before that I believe that before this century is out, we will be able to tune in our devices to such a sensitivity that we'll be able to actually communicate with the people who are not incarnated. And that will completely change the way we look at religion and afterlife and all of that.
Sure will. Let's go east of the Rockies. Penelope's with us from Springfield, Illinois. Hi, Penelope.
Good day. If I could ask you, please. I know the president is supposed to be a Gemini, and I have heard that our country is a Gemini. And so I'm wondering whether with the planetary alignments that will be coming during the eclipse, whether that will have anything to do with him or the country.
Interesting take. And I'm a Gemini, John. So
yes,
what's happening?
And so is our president.
Yep.
And so is the vice president, who may actually replace him sometime. Though I know a lot of astrologers debate over Gemini being the rising sign of the United States, I have plotted the birth chart of the United States with Scorpio rising being the rising sign and Cancer. It's pretty clear at 13 degrees Cancer, even the sidereal astrology, that America is a Cancerian nation. Interestingly enough, we've had more presidents who are under the sign of Cancer than any other astrology sign for our Cancer country. So there's an interesting thing that is the main astrological struggle for Trump and the American people, whether they voted for him or not. It's like a relationship that's a rocky marriage. It's a relationship where the suitor, the president, and the suited, the wife, the people, came into this with a lot of delusional expectations of what their president was really about, and the president had his own delusions about what the American people were about. It's called in astrology the Sun-Neptune square. It was born under the birth signs of our last two presidents. President Bush and President Obama both had this what's called the delusional par excellence, the a sign of delusion. You think you're talking to God and God tells you to invade Iraq. You try to seduce, if you're Obama, the Republican leadership, who within weeks of your first term made it clear that they're there to destroy you, and you just don't want to believe it because you take the challenge of playing them like they're the woman that's impossible to get. It made Obama in his astrology a man who's obsessed with seduction of the opposition, and he wasted a lot of his political capital and time trying to win them over.
Now you
have a situation where, fortunately, Donald Trump has none of that in his birth chart. Thank goodness.
And doesn't care about it.
But he has it in his relationship with the U.S. birth chart. His sun sign is squared Neptune in Virgo, which in the U.S. chart aspects are boom-bust cycles of economy. So the downfall, or the biggest challenge to break through for Donald Trump, is this infrastructure tax reform issue more than anything else. He's got to get the country working again. And if he can, he can survive and finish his term, but he's got to get through this year and next year.
All right, John, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you on just a second on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Lon Strickler joins me as we talk about phantoms and monsters, unexplained encounters. Looking forward to that. Okay, welcome back to Coast. John Hogue with us, of course, and let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. John, I truly appreciate your centered approach toward prophecy. And my question is concerning nuclear exchange. We have almost had all-out nuclear war over the last 50 or 60 years, not just the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, but in 1990, there was Pakistan, the military command in Pakistan, almost launched a nuclear first strike on India. And, of course, there's coast-to-coast guest on electromagnetic pulse, Peter Pry, who wrote an amazing book in 1999 called War Scare, which documented in the 1980s and 1990s that Russia and America had about a dozen incidents where we almost launched. We came within minutes, perhaps even seconds, of nuclear launch. And my question is, I think that nuclear launch will not happen because of leaders such as Clinton, Trump, Kim, Putin, etc., but will happen because of accident, perhaps a cascade effect, a domino effect,
yes,
a glitch in nuclear command and control. And I was wondering if prophecy addresses that in our near future.
Yes, it does. In my book, A New Cold War, the prophecies of Nostradamus, Stormberger, and Edgar Cayce, which I had to rush and write in when I saw the countdown Nostradamus had put up for a thermonuclear war from 7 years to 3 months to 13 years after a new Cold War rose between the two Eagle Kings of powers of the North, which are Russia and America. Now since the Soviet Union collapsed, Russia has eagle, double-headed eagle as its totem, so is America with the bald eagle. And the general tenor of the prophecies, to make a long story short, is people walking in with their eyes wide shut into a vast nuclear disaster that nobody thought was coming. And that seems to be the permeating theme for the Third World War that's foreseen by a handful of people in the last 1,000 years who were very accurate in dating and describing World War One and Two. Most important thing that came up, though, was that Edgar Cayce was the only one in that group, American prophet who died in 1945, who gave a solution for it not happening. And it's kind of a shocker when you think about it, because between 1934 and 1944, he documented readings and trance that basically the theme was that Russia was the hope of the world after it dropped communism, that the new Russia that would rise out of the end of communism was the hope of the world. And it needed America to be a helpful brother in that process of developing its destiny. But Cayce left a caveat, and he basically said in so many words that if we preach freedom but don't practice it with other nations, if we're hypocrites, then we're not serving our role to help the Russians who bestride East and West to be the peacemakers of the world. Right now, we're not doing that. Although, to Trump's credit, I give him this, he has consistently in his heart wanted to make better relations with Russia. He's been stymied by the deep state and the military-industrial complex that, you know, just needs war to keep its profits going.
Sure.
You don't want to stop war in the Middle East. You don't want to stop the Cold War that the Obama administration with its neocons started and neoliberal supremacists. You don't want peace to reign in the world. And I still hold hope that because of Trump's unpredictable nature, that he won't be completely controlled by all this, the Congress actually trying to take his powers away, and that he might, in fact, after that all happened with the sanctions bill, he still sent Tillerson to have a great meeting with Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia. They're just going to go ahead and keep trying to make better relations with Russia. Also, I think that what's been spouted around U.S. news about Vladimir Putin is so grossly exaggerated that I would say history will consider him a far more rational leader than most of the leaders that are around right now. That doesn't mean I agree with his politics or that I think we should all follow an oligarch, but he's an oligarch who is a rationalist, a practical, pragmatic politician. He's very intelligent, and he's not somebody who's going to be hoodwinked by the neocons into a war with us.
Joe in the Bronx, it's your turn, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good.
I'd like to ask, John, I just want to float a theory that perhaps, and I had a question along with this, perhaps the moon's magnetic pull is somehow interacting with the Earth's magnetic core, and when it drags its shadow across the area of totality, it is exerting such force, magnetic force on that this interaction is causing the earthquake activity. Now, I'd like to ask you a question. Does the time of totality in a certain area affect the severity of whatever earthquakes are to follow?
Well, the 1999 quake had pretty much average totality of 2.5 minutes, pretty much like what we're going to see in the Great American Eclipse. However, the Great Eclipse of 2009 was during a supermoon, so at perigee, so you had, rather than a 70-mile shadow, you had over a 100-mile shadow, and some areas saw over 5 minutes of totality, which is very, very rare. It's not going to happen again until the 2130-something. But it didn't make that much of a difference in the sequences of quakes that happened in 1999. They didn't increase. They weren't vaster in a way. Actually, more loss of life happened during the 1999 tremors than what happened in 2009. Although there were some significant tsunamis in 2009, Japan and Samoa. So I don't know how that will impact, because we're really looking at only a totality at 2 minutes and 33 seconds, I believe, around southern Illinois. So it's more like an average totality. But I would agree with you that there's something. The clue, the doorway to unraveling this mystery, is something electromagnetic.
Alan is in the Coulee City, Washington. Go ahead, Alan. Thank you for calling.
Yes, George and John. I'm your neighbor here in Central Washington State by Grand Coulee Dam.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I had a few fun facts here to lighten things up about the eclipse. Mark Twain wrote a book called Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, and it was made into a movie in 1949 starring Bing Crosby. And somehow he goes back to days of King Arthur and gets on the wrong side of the power struggle and is going to be executed on the chopping block. Well, as he's waiting in line, he looks in his almanac and see there's a total eclipse about to happen, fortunately, in a few minutes. So he tells the people to let him go, or he'll blot out the sun forever. And they, you know, don't believe him. He says, okay, so the eclipse is blotting out the sun, and they're hollering, bring the sun back. First, he has to say the magic words. This is what I remember from the movie here, I know, 20 years ago when I saw it. The magic words were, Walla Walla, Washington.
That's right.
Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And I don't remember what the third one was, but it's interesting that Bing Crosby was from Spokane, which is going to get 90-some percent of totality, and Walla Walla might get 95.
So, well, yeah, I'm going to get 93 in Whidbey Island, so...
Old classics.
Well, it's Walla Walla. I imagine the story circumstantially would be that Bing changed the magic words.
Let's take Charlie in Coos Bay, Oregon. Welcome to the show, Charlie. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
Sure thing.
May I preface my comment by saying that you appear to be the only rational, reasonably polite, conservative commentator on talk radio. Those who are on during drive time and prime time appear to be egotistical, condescending bullies, and that includes all the biggies. Now, my comment. You and your guest have referred to the Korean War. Technically, it was, in fact, a United Nations police action. There's an important legal distinction. Even more important is the moral distinction. The distinction being that our government did not have the courage of their convictions. That began the decline of the moral fabric of this country. It continues today. We are fighting everywhere without the courage of our convictions.
Yep, that is so true.
We haven't declared a war actually since Korea. Since Korea onward, every war we fought has not been, we haven't done it since World War II, where we actually officially, the Congress confers with the president to give the president powers to wage war. And then that clicks in all the laws and rules of warfare. That's why all these abuses like the concentration camp in Guantanamo can thrive, because technically we have not declared war on Islamic terrorism or Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And yes, it is a moral corruption. And if it doesn't get fixed, things have an action consequence. And that could happen in the next months to 5 years, coincidentally or by intent.
Well, John, we're going on 16 years in Afghanistan, 14 years in Iraq. That's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's draining our treasure. We're behaving like a hegemonic empire that all it can do is have a big military, just like Rome.
And look what happened to Rome.
And you know, we do not have our economy is hollowing out, but our military is big. I mean, it looks like the Soviet Union to me. I mean, the things that we're doing now remind me of the Soviet Union in the 1980s, where all they had was their 4.5 million man army and their 50,000 tanks in the Warsaw Pact, and they couldn't even put bread on the
right
table.
And half their population were drunks and alcoholics.
And then what then happens is they fight a little relatively small guerrilla war police action, if you will, in Afghanistan. They occupy Afghanistan like we occupy Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, Afghanistan is the famous place that gobbles up empires.
And got booted out thanks to us.
And they collapsed.
Yep.
They imploded. There are prophecies that show that if we stay on the track we are in, we will have exactly the same thing happen to us. But I must say something positive and hopeful about the future of America beyond our hegemonic era, where we're a superpower. Our greatest, brightest destiny is actually ahead of us once we drop this hubris of being in our 800 bases and our over-endowed military and actually just become a significant brother nation among nations. We will then, according to many prophecies about the coming of a new humanity in the Aquarian Age, America will become the next cradle of new religious thinking that started with a lot of Eastern thought coming in the 60s and 70s and 80s to the United States. It will amalgamate with Native American understanding of the spiritual world into a whole new religiousness, and America will be the core of that.
Let's go to Randy in Omaha, Nebraska now. Hello, Randy. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. What a show.
Thank you, sir.
You guys are covering all the bases and all the great ways, and I just, this is very insightful and helpful, and I, too, you know, believe in the Indian, the Native American ways and stuff. So,
yeah.
Anyway, just I was going to make a comment and a question.
Sure.
A couple months ago, I recall Warren Buffett made a statement, something like, we do not have quite the percentage of the world's gross domestic product that we had 20, 30, 40 years ago, but we're still the leader. The question is whether we can be the moral leader as well as the economic leader. And that's really kind of a surprising statement, but very important.
Go with your question before we're out of time here.
The question was polar shift. Does that affect or come into any of your research or comments?
John, one quick answer
I can say is, as far as I'm concerned, no polar shifts are going to happen. And if there is, it's electromagnetic, and it will not cause all the things. The poles have shifted electromagnetically before many times, and it wouldn't even be noticed by us. But Warren Buffett, I would say, he's had a lion's share of a lot of the wealth. Sounds like some economist from ancient Rome, you know. He's gone Cretaceous, I would say, like the dinosaurs. There's a certain mindset when an empire is falling where the leaders and the captains and kings of economy just can't see what's coming because they can only see backwards into the past.
John, we are rapidly out of time, my friend. Thank you again for what you did for us in Everett, Washington at our live stage show. And, of course, always on Coast to Coast. You're one of our favorites, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, George.
John Hoag, and his books, of course, can be found at his website, HoagProphecy.com. Up next, Lon Strickler joins us. We're going to talk about monsters, phantoms, the unexplained, a classic Coast to Coast program tonight. And that is all next on Coast to Coast AM.